You have to understand that for those who don't yet want to follow a spiritual path, problems or an existential crisis make them ask questions, mobilize, get out of the state of lethargy they are in and thus evolve. Either they want to evolve or they do not. Okay, but this means that they always need to have unsolved problems in order to evolve? AI asked, puzzled. Caesar smiled. No, of course not. Most of the times they think that the difficult situation they are confronted with is hopeless, but the state of despair or lack of hope is their greatest enemy. This is why you should always avoid surrendering to negative moods. You ever noticed that the attitude or state of mind you choose can even bring about the help you needed? If one has a confident, strong and even optimistic attitude, despite the apparent trouble falling upon oneself, help can be called up on a time and the problem is solved. Unfortunately, many don't yet find the necessary strength for this and they abandon the fight even before it begins. AI remained silent for a while, thinking about what he said. This might be difficult, I said. How can I maintain this inner attitude? Through the thoughts and moods you generate every moment. It's not that hard, provided that you are careful and persevering in this practice. You should never despair. It seems that all those who think that the problem the Atma confronted with has no solution do not really know a fundamental truth, namely that what they think is what they will experience in their lives. When they believe they have no hope, they are the ones who remove any possibility to receive, through different means, the help they could receive if they had different thoughts. It seems almost unbelievable. But you should know that a proper attitude attracts the right energies which can then radically alter a difficult situation in life. If people have negative thoughts, however, they will not find the solution to their problems because they are the ones who block it. But maybe destiny creates a difficult situation in a person's life, AI said. If he or she must endure through that problem, I think it would be very hard to change this. Before destiny or other aspects which oppose a harmonious life, it is people themselves who, most of the time, generate a negative state through their attitudes so that situations become serious. Of course, they could say that, apart from the fact that they have a problem, they also have to generate constructive attitude. But, if you really want to receive help and rely on the help of divine forces, then you'll have to generate this adequate attitude. This will attract the possibility that, most of the time, WTMLL receive unexpected help. In theory, WTMLL right, AI said, but don't yet forget that those who are in great trouble are already confused. Most of the time, they can no longer appreciate or assess a situation correctly. This occurs because they simply can't let go of the idea that they have a big problem, Caesar explained. The difficult situation someone is confronted with in life generates a certain tension in that person's mind. In different situations, this tension can become creative and trigger, apparently by accident, an answer or an entire series of solutions that can offer the final solution to the respective problem or existential crisis. I asked Caesar what should be done in order to identify such moments. It's essential to pay attention and interpret the signs correctly. For instance, the words someone utters can have a special meaning even if the person who utters them doesn't clearly know what they mean. Those words complete or give a certain meaning to the problem that the respective person is confronted with. The person who utters those words can trigger the spark of intuitive understanding of the way in which that problem can be solved. It can sometimes even happen through reading a certain text or looking at an inspired work of art. All this, however, is outside the person who is confronted with the difficult situation. But that person can suddenly feel a deep emotion because of these signs and everything is arranged as if it were Erebus and thus offering what it takes to solve the difficult problem. As I understood those aspects very well, I added my own comment. Furthermore, I believe that this indirectly shows us proof that God exists and He is omnipresent and omnipotent. An initiate who knows this no longer feels amazement when confronted with such phenomena of synchronicity. Caesar approved by nodding his head. I am glad you have understood these important issues, A, he said, A, because the phenomena of synchronicity in our existence, which many regard as simple coincidences or accidents, clearly proves that God is almighty. Synchronicity, if we look at it from an initiatory point of view, is proof that God can do anything, and the phenomenon of synchronicity is the expression of that omnipotence. If people indeed paid attention, they would most often be amazed and feel overwhelmed with the way in which the answers they badly need appear in an almost miraculous way. Maybe if such situations were more frequent, people would become more aware of them, I said thoughtfully. Caesar answered, this kind of help is much more frequent than you believe, especially when the problem is very difficult and seems to have no solution at a certain stage. Most of the times you can even witness such a answer CTM which are actually addressed to those who are confronted with problems near you. Yes, but they can miss the opportunity because they focus on the mind-body whole that it represents. And then, the range of solutions they have at their disposal is narrowed. The problem is a bit more delicate, ATM Caesar answered. The human being is not just a whole made up of body and mind. There are also other very important aspects which define our existence and which we should not ignore. For example, breath, then the senses, our relations and the way we live. All these function as a unit. If something changes in one of these parts, you can be sure that the changes will quickly appear in the other parts as well. FATMS one more indispensable element, however, and in order for you to understand it more clearly, I'll illustrate it with a story that I learned from Dr. Xen many years ago during my practice at the base near B. Anxious to hear Caesar's story, I took a more comfortable position in the ergonomic chair. I was looking through the windscreen glass at the strange indigo-colored lighting effects reflected by the tunnel. For a few moments, I thought about the situation I was in, which was inconceivable 2 or 3 years ago. I was traveling through one of the secret underground tunnels to a hidden and mysterious target from another continent. I was also a part of the most occult section of the Romanian secret services and was talking to Caesar about different initiatory and spiritual aspects in a vehicle that meets the standards of the most advanced technology currently available. I felt very good and safe near Caesar, whom I considered a true spiritual master and to whom I owed everything in terms of the amazing events that happened in my life during the past years. After all, I even owed him the path of spiritual transformation and evolution which I had entered with doubtful steps. While I was thinking about all of this, I was fully relaxed and feeling very good as Caesar began his story. A year long time ago, there lived a king whose life was threatened and who did not know what to do in order to protect himself from danger. He spoke to all his counselors, but none of them could give him a satisfactory solution. After hearing people talking about the existence of a wise man who was secluded in a mountain monastery, the king decided to go to him and ask for advice. The trip was long and unpleasant for the king, whose mind was troubled by the imminent danger which threatened his life. When he finally reached the monastery, he found the wise old man working in the garden. He introduced himself, told the old man the purpose of his visit and ordered him bluntly to find a solution. Nevertheless, the old man continued to work silently without even raising his eyes. The king was at first furious, but then he started to observe the calm and regular movements of the wise old man. Eventually, he asked if he could lend a hand. Nodding with his head, the wise old man indicated for him to grab one of the tools nearby and imitate his movement. Silently and together, they worked like this for a long time. In time, the king started to like what he was doing as well as the silent company of the old man. The king's mind thus became calm and untroubled, and his heart was easy. Suddenly, an armed man jumped over the garden fence. But since he was careless, he fell and cut his hand badly. The king immediately took off his shirt, tore it and made a tourniquet out of it. The man threw himself at the king's feet, thanking him and begging for forgiveness. Amazed, the king asked, why do you ask for my forgiveness? You haven't done me any wrong. The man then answered, forgive me, for I had come to kill you. The king turned with great amazement to the wise old man, who smiled and told him, "As you can see, it seems that you have already found the solution to the serious problem that was troubling you. Ma, this is why I'm telling you that you should never abandon the path to a viable solution, no matter how difficult the situation in may be. But, as you could see, it's necessary to go through an inner transformation and have a superior understanding of the problem for the savior solution to come. Without this superior understanding, the mind will keep on going around the same selfish wishes and impulses, and the solution cannot come in such conditions." The example Caesar gave me seemed very conclusive to me, since it synthesized the notions he had told me before in a very practical manner. I thanked him with gratitude and then asked him to give me some more details about aspects related to the mind, senses and breath which he had mentioned earlier. Confessing to him that I had already read some things on this subject, things were still not very clear in my mind at this point. I needed a synthesis, a connection, and a unitary concept to connect all of these notions together. Caesar heartily agreed to develop this idea, since he also believes that this aspect is very important for the human being at TM's spiritual evolution, especially during the first stages. First of all, you need to understand the mechanism. Breath, senses and mind all influence each other. If certain troubles affect an area, the effect will also act upon all of the others. Out of these three aspects, it seems that the mind holds supremacy. Nevertheless, the mind can be easily influenced by changes of breath. You mean breathing, ATM, I said, in order to be sure. Read about the extraordinary results that can be obtained by yoga practices of rhythmic breathing. It seems to be a real science. Yes, breath maintains life and is at the same time very mysterious. This is not only about air. A corpse is also surrounded by air, but it can't use it. I could tell you a wonderful story about breath, senses and mind from the Hindu sacred texts. Have you read the Upanishads? No, I've only read a few summaries of them which I found in Lenora TM's library, I answered. This story is very conclusive. In a metaphorical approach, the text says that a quarrel started between the mind, senses and breath, because they all wanted to know which of them was the most important. Then they asked for advice from a spiritual master, and he told them that the most important part was the one without which the whole could not survive. This is why, for a short period of time, they agreed to take turns and get out of the body in order to see the effects. The first to leave the body were the senses, but life went on without them. Then the mind left, and, even if monotonous, life went on. But when breath wanted to leave the body, the mind and the senses also felt that they were forced to leave. Therefore, they bowed to their proof and admitted the prevalence of breath. I smiled as I thought how simply and conclusively things could be presented by being wise. Caesar continued his explanation, going back to the issue of breath. It is therefore very clear that life is connected to breath, and this influences all of our activities. But, in order to perform certain activities, we need energy, and this is mainly given by our breath. You now see clearly that by means of an adequate control of breathing, we actually seek to obtain an effect on the flow of energy between the subtle parts and the most tangible parts of the human being. Ao started practicing the five Tibetan techniques from the secret parchment from Tibet, I said. They are but shy attempts. But even so, I've realized what huge force can be triggered by means of controlled breathing. Here, it is very important to have a certain continuity, and to be persevering, Caesar continued. If done correctly and constantly, simple and conscious breathing can determine very interesting changes in the structure of the human being. We don't have to do a who knows what complicated breathing exercises. Just remember that the essential element is to involve thinking in this process. In a mysterious way, in such circumstances, the simple fact that you are conscious of your breathing creates a kind of bridge which connects you to higher areas of consciousness and perception. I remained thoughtful for a while. I did not understand what could trigger this change in the state of consciousness, But Caesar immediately explained, "Ao, this mysterious reaction depends a lot on the way we focus on our breath. We kind of TMT say that the balance between oxygen and CO2 is not important, but we can expect more from our breath than a simple chemical exchange done at the level of our lungs. People are only interested in the so-called chemistry of breath, but it would be desirable for them to observe as well the experiences that occur when breathing is controlled and which can give them a dimension which is not accessible to oxygen." A. Caesar stopped explaining at the intervention of Lieutenant Truro, who was requesting some technical details. "I was looking ahead at the sinuous shape of the huge tunnel through which it seemed that we were advancing with great speed. The strange indigo light, which was slightly phosphorescent, seemed to have a magical influence over me, making me somehow disconnect from my normal awareness and float in a parallel dimension. I did not TMT see anything in particular, but at the same time I felt a state of deep relief, freedom and inner peace. At the same time I continued to be aware in a vague way of the reality surrounding me, of the vehicle I was in, and of the mysterious tunnel I was traveling through. This reality, however, seemed more and more vague, leaving room for that superior experience in which I wanted to plunge as quickly as possible. The last thing I remember is that Caesar no longer spoke but fell into a deep state of meditation because I noticed the vertical position of his back on the chair. I then fell into a deep sleep and don't TMT remember anything." Next headline, the stop. "I opened my eyes when Caesar was parking the vehicle next to one of the stationary points. Ao, we'll stay here to eat and rest, A, he said. It seemed to me that I had slept for only a very short while, but I soon found out that, in fact, almost 12 hours had passed since our departure from the projection chamber. I did not remember anything that could have been a dream. It seems that I was completely torn from the physical reality I was in as well as the subtle reality of dreams. When I stepped out of the vehicle, I touched the ground and felt as if I were staggering, as if I was not sure that I could support myself. The entire surface of the tunnel was covered in a material which had a special texture. At the same time, on its surface, there seemed to be a layer of phosphorescent aura which was indigo colored. I think the strange sensation I felt was especially due to this strange characteristic of the tunnel which created the perception of a relative instability. The other two vehicles also stopped behind us. Lieutenant Nakoaro Atilda copyright and the two Americans were unloading the baggage we needed for camping. I noticed what could be termed as magnetic mattresses which were relatively narrow, for one person only, but pretty thick. I also saw two devices, one of which seemed to be an oscilloscope and the other a tripod upon which Aiden mounted a cylinder from which some sort of antennas emerged. On this device, digital displays were placed at a certain distance. The young man then turned on his computer and started working on it, remaining very concentrated and looking from time to time at the information displayed on the cylinder screens. My task was to distribute food for everyone. The mission was simple because all the necessary food was contained in a metal box with precise and well-arranged compartments in which the airspace fooder was placed. Lieutenant Nakoaro Atilda copyright used to speak of it this way, referring directly to the fact that we were practically eating the type of special food that astronauts ate during their space missions. I had received prior training concerning each type of AE food, A, its contents, the necessary quantity for one person and the order in which the products had to be eaten. In fact, they were like bars, containing concentrated food, minerals and vitamins which were not very tasty but very nourishing. I for one liked the bar that contained concentrated green barley. As for liquids, we had enough still mineral water and a kind of tea made of citrus fruits and other vitamins which had a very pleasant taste. After having prepared the portions, I started eating my bars, at the same time inspecting the place where we stopped. The arrangement was very simple. On both sides of the tunnel there were three or four medium-sized boxes mainly containing other supplies, some measurement devices and rechargeable batteries left from the previous expedition. I asked Caesar if it was difficult to maintain these intermediary stations and the corresponding logistics. Ao, in a paradoxical way, There are no problems here. There is something very strange about this tunnel. It seems to exist. We travel through it and it is part of our physical reality. But we can also say that it does not exist. When the command for the space distortion is cancelled from the projection chamber, it completely disappears. We noticed, however, that after ATMS reactivated, the tunnel comes back with the last information it contained. By that, I mean that any changes brought about inside of it reappear exactly as they were when the tunnel is reactivated. Soon, we realize that time is thus exceeded. The space-time continuum is created from a kind of enigmatic memory, exactly in the shape and condition of the last information it contained. ATMS like the idea lay conservation. Even if we're far from understanding this mystery, the situation is very convenient for us. Practically, the station, airy points are almost impossible to alter. I could not TMT understand how this was possible either, but, it surely was real because I living that reality right then. Ao, but, what a TMS so special about this tunnel? I asked, even though we had already spoken about this subject a little. Ao, what made the builders choose this alternative? Ao, nobody knows why. At a certain moment, we believed, from the three tunnels that start from the projection chamber, that this might have been the last tunnel that was built and was therefore constructed with a superior technology a long time after the other two. But, of course, this is only a supposition. Taking a better look at the tunnel, I started feeling dizzy again. I felt as if something was pulling me out of my body. The slightly phosphorescent indigo light, the nuances moving slowly on the walls and the complete silence had a very powerful effect on the human mind. At the Alpha base, I had successfully passed all psychological tests, some of which were very difficult. But even so, the complex effect of the tunnel was amazingly strong and required the full use of all my self-control resources. Walking in the direction in which we had just traveled, I stopped about 10 meters away from the stationary point. In that area, the tunnel was perfectly straight and looked huge with its opening and the subtle play of indigo light which made it seem unreal most of the time. Suddenly, I felt isolated with a subtle feeling of panic starting to take shape in my mind. I had the feeling that I was suspended and outside of tangible reality even though the others were only a few meters behind me. That feeling of loneliness and mystery was overwhelming, so I quickly returned to A Camp. A with a holographic projection, Aiden was just explaining the place where we were from the point of view of the geometry of the planet. I was fascinated to see the sinuous road through the underground tunnel that we had gone through, and I noticed that we were already under the Mediterranean Sea, which I saw represented as a big cavity in the segment of the continental platform displayed in that projection. The young American explained that the determination of our positioning was possible by means of complex interpolation. Stat used a kind of common air language here between his computer and that cylinder-shaped device placed on the tripod, but he was not allowed to give us further information about it. As we already felt satiated after having eaten three courses, we each laid down on our mattresses for a restful sleep at Cesar TMS' suggestion. Even if I had already slept for a couple of hours in the vehicle, I still felt the need to lie down, close my eyes, and fall into dreaming. Those were very special conditions, and I realized that they had a special effect over me. I was sure that the longer I remained in that tunnel that both my inner and outer perceptions were obviously changed. First of all, there was an overwhelming sensation that I was dilating, becoming larger and larger. Even if I had a correct perception of my body, I had a feeling that I was outside of it at the same time. My thoughts were more fluid. I felt as if I could understand things about which I knew nothing before, and everything was happening with the background of a feeling of inner freedom which was very beneficial and which filled my entire being with an unexplained happiness. Laying on the mattress face upwards, I fell asleep in a couple of seconds as I looked at the grandiose tunnel ceiling which seemed immaterial in the indigo light which discreetly covered it. Next headline, Meandering of the Mind. After a couple of hours, we woke up, packed our small baggage and continued our journey through the tunnel. I could tell that, at a certain level, My mind tried to get used to this action, which seemed a bit AO for the physical world but at the same time was a part of it. There was much contradictory information combining in an unforeseen way in my subconscious, and almost all of this information referred to the tunnel we were traveling through. First off, its origins were strange. It was practically a reality AO created from a space-time distortion which could then AO preserve itself almost perfectly. The tunnel itself gave me the feeling that it was at the border between two different areas of creation. During our stop, Aiden made some approximate calculations and hypothesized that we might be at the intersection between two dephased realities, but he still could not TMT understand how it was possible to obtain the tunnel's stability under such conditions. I was a bit more practical and was happy that this stability existed, as it created no trouble for us and our physical integrity. I was also fascinated by the special psychical state that was gradually taking over me as I spent more time in the tunnel. I imagined that this state of mind was definitely connected to the special energetic condition of the tunnel and to the AE material it was made of. Its geometry was imposing, although very simple, as were a series of other special conditions that contributed to the strange ensemble. For example, the temperature inside was always 26 degrees Celsius. Everything was perfectly clean and I did not TMT notice any dust during our entire journey. Finally, there was complete silence, which was only disturbed by the slight buzzing of the electric vehicles we were traveling in. To me, the strongest influence seemed to be the indigo light, which, in a way that I did not understand, created a feeling of acute nostalgia in my soul, almost making me lose contact with the surrounding reality so that I could dive into myself towards something enlightening which I felt was drawing me like a powerful magnet. Caesar explained to me that those conditions were ideal for introspection and for the deepest meditation, but that was not appropriate for the current situation as we needed to stay vigilant and active from a psychosomatic point of view. This is why he adjusted the visibility of the windscreen so that the perception of the movement through the tunnel and of the indigo light no longer had such a powerful influence over me. I soon felt the effects of this measure because I again became curious and wanted to find out new things. I even allowed myself to make an analytical observation, noticing that maybe those sensations were in fact mental reflections and that, through a firm control of the mind, they could completely be controlled. With a discreet smile, Caesar developed the subject. "AO generally speaking, ATM," he said, "AO the mind is like a master of time, and this is why, for it not to dispose of time as it wishes, it needs continuous attention. Most people AO function according to its characteristics, and this is due to the fact that the development of the mind begins a long time before people are aware of their ego. They have all suffered many genetic and cultural influences, as well as many personal experiences which have shaped the way they think, react and feel with regard to what goes on around them. By this, I mean that the mind is shaped through these factors in a way which is specific to every person, and this determines how they see the world around them and what it is made of. AO in this case," I added quickly, feeling inspired, "AE considering the fact that the mind is directly influenced by the aspects to which it is exposed, this means that we have to expose it to positive aspects in order to enrich it. AO of course there is a high chance that we have this possibility," Caesar agreed. "AO actually, this is what the entire theory of positive thinking, promoted by Occidental practical psychology, is based upon. Unfortunately, few persons are willing to reflect on the mysteries it involves and analyze them carefully. I think we've many times seen people who have good intentions and even wish to transform themselves and think positively, but they are carried by the flow at TM and feel lost and with no strength. AO yes, I have," AI said, thinking that I was a good example. "AO but why does this happen?" "AO the reason is the main characteristic of the mind, namely, fluctuation," AO he explained. "AO if you have the patience and curiosity to observe yourself even for a few couple of seconds, you'll see that the mind goes through a continuous transformation. No state seems to be permanent, and you should start by accepting this reality. Actually, if we make a summary, We can distinguish three main states of the mind through which every human being has gone at least once: a powerful state of agitation or, on the contrary, of extreme lethargy, a state of instability, which oscillates between attention and lack of attention, and a state beyond attention, when the mind is quiet and absorbed.